Marty Lurie here on KMBR 680. Spring training baseball. You never know who you're going to see at the ballpark. And fans, when you come to the ballpark, you better see four people, and those are the umpires, because you don't have a game without them. We're joined by Ron Culpa, and if you saw the World Series in 2011, you knew he was part of it. Longtime Major League umpire, Ron. Nice to have you on the show. First of all, umpires and baseball, they go together. How did you even think about becoming an umpire?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. It's great to be on your show. It's, you know, baseball has been a part of my life ever since I could walk. I grew up playing the game all my life. I played high school ball, played through college, and after I didn't get drafted out of college, I decided, how can I stay in the game, because I was crushed. And my father said, how about umpire school, and off I went.
Boy, where did you go to school? And, you know, it's funny you say that. I've read some of the biographies of Jocko Conlin and Tom Gorman and some of the old-time National League umpires. They played ball. They some were in the major leagues. We used to have a lot of major leaguers that became umpires. So how do you even think of going to school? How does it come about?
Well, I just love the game, like I said. So I went down to Harry Windelstadt's in 1992. I qualified as one of their top students. Got a job, went to rookie ball, spent 6 years in the minors, and just finished up my 13th year in the big leagues.
Wow, boy, what a thrill. Ron Culpa is with us. All right, let's get to the nuts and bolts of life as an umpire, because, you know, we show up to the game, the team comes in on the charter, and the game goes on. What is life like as an umpire travel-wise?
Travel-wise, it kills us. I mean, it's a long season. It's a grind. That's what takes the most out of our bodies. On a regular day, we're in a series. Say the Giants are home for 12. My crew will come in and work that first series, usually three or four game series. We'll pack up. We'll fly out the next morning because we can't fly charters like the team. So we'll fly. They fly us first class, and we'll fly the next city. We'll do the same thing all over again. Usually on a day of a game, I'll usually get up, have a nice breakfast, work out, have a nice nap. Usually get to the ballpark about an hour and a half before game time, stretch, get ready, and go out there and do our job.
I guess you're the vagaries of travel. I know the baggage sometimes gets lost, and we always see the umpires once in a while wearing some rather odd clothing at a ballpark. Ever happened to you?
It hasn't happened to me yet, knock on wood, but now they've taken care of that problem. Now we have extra equipment and uniforms in the locker room, so if that ever happens nowadays, we don't have guys out there working in sweatsuits.
Now, tell me about your crew, the people that you work with.
This year I'm with Darryl Cousins. He's my crew chief. He's been in the big leagues, I believe, for close to 31 years. He's a California guy. I'm also working with Jim Joyce, who's from Oregon, and Jimmy Wolf, who lives out here in Phoenix.
Boy, that's a very famous crew. Of course, Darryl Cousins we know well, and Jim Joyce, you know where he is in the ballpark. You can hear him all the time with his calls and balls and strikes. And Jim Wolf, of course, the brother Randy Wolf.
That's correct. Yeah, great crew. This will be our second year working together. We had a great time last year. We had a great season, the four of us, and I'm glad they stuck us together again.
All right, so what's the toughest part of the physical part of being at the ballpark, calling a game? What's the toughest part? What's your biggest challenge?
Probably our biggest challenge as an umpire, we have a lot of arguments on check swings. You see a lot of arguments on check swings. I think 2 years ago, we had over 70-something ejections over check swings. And but as far as the umpire, our daily grind is, you know, working the plate. You know, we're doing 350, 400 squats a night, usually 3 to 3.5 hours, and that's what takes a toll on the bodies, the knees and the back, and that's usually what our biggest toll on our bodies are.
What do you think about the electronic, you know, stuff that they have at the ballpark? I think I was going to say surveillance, but not really. But the Quest Tech and all that, and how it affects you guys.
It's okay. You know, it doesn't bother me. It's, you know, we get evaluated after every plate job. I'll get a disc, and I get evaluated by Major League Baseball. And the system now is called the ZE system, and it's a great system. I think it's a way for them to evaluate us, and a way of showing us how to get better and how to improve as umpires.
Well, you've had some good games as an umpire, and I say good, interesting, historic games. The Justin Verlander no-hitter, his first, and a game I was at, almost Shannon Stewart broke up a no-hitter for Curt Schilling. I think with two out in the ninth inning, got to hit the right field, both of those games. So from the umpire's perspective, as we sit here in beautiful Scottsdale in spring training and recall some of that, what's it like from an umpire's perspective?
It's really exciting. You know, that the Schilling one, it was, he shook off Veritek. And it was the only time he shook him off all game. And he thought Stewart was going to take on first pitch, and so he shook him off and threw fastball. But Stewart was swinging, base hit, and it broke it off. And then I called my father after the game. I said, listen, I'll never get that close again. Not, and there's no way. And my very next plate job, like we go to Detroit, and they're playing interleague play against Milwaukee, and Verlander throws one my very next plate job also.
So do you feel it as it's happening? Did, you know, we always ask the pitcher that. When did you know it was a no-hitter? What about from the umpire's standpoint?
Oh, yeah, you know, usually about the we get to the fifth or sixth inning, you know, you start thinking, this guy's throwing the ball pretty good. But so many things have to come into play for a guy to get a no-hitter. Usually it's one or two great catches. Up the middle, where a guy dives in the outfield and saves one. There's so many things that have to happen, and but it's exciting for us too.
Yeah. Well, the game has changed to some degree, going back to the Leo DeRocher days of kicking the shin guards of Jocko Conlin and Earl Weaver, turning his hat around with Ron Luciano. Umpires, do they have a shorter fuse, or are we in a more civilized society? What's the sort of the give and take?
We talked about this many times with other umpires and managers. You know, we don't have the Earl Weavers anymore. And one guy, I forget what manager, told me a couple years ago out here during spring, he goes, Ron, he goes, if I come out and get ejected, I got to see myself 30 times on ESPN. And I just think, and I also think the quality of umpiring is a lot better.
All right, as we sit in Scottsdale here, and you never know what's going to happen on live radio, but nothing's burning down. That's all right. All right, so do you get it? Have you, in your career, gotten into beefs with managers and ejections? And take us through a couple of them, just so we get to learn it from your eyes.
Yeah, you know, usually it happens. I usually get two or three every year. And, you know, it's sometimes this year I might have 11. You never know who's going to be in a bad mood one day or what's going to happen throughout the course of a game. I guess I was notorious. I had my biggest ejection I ever had that really, I guess, made the press was I got headbutted by Carl Everett about 10 years ago when he was in Boston. And, you know, I was a young umpire at the time, and it was in a situation that escalated, and, you know, and he got suspended for 10 games and fined an X amount of dollars. And, you know, that's probably the biggest thing. And then I guess from the Bay, for all the Bay fans out there, I had to eject Barry Bonds about, you know, when he was going through the for the record that year. He came up and pinched hit in the seventh inning, said some things he shouldn't have said, he got ejected, and that's when Alou was managing. So Alou comes out, and the fans are throwing everything on the field at me that they could possibly get their hands on. And I said, listen, I told him what I had, and he says, okay. And I gave him a lot of rope because, you know, he's chasing the record, and I try to keep him in the ballgame. And so happened that he got ejected, and I told Alou, I said, listen, I said, if I was you, I wouldn't stand next to me. He goes, why is that? I go, you're going to get killed by one of these bottles. So he ended up leaving. We had to actually clear the field, and they cleaned all the debris up. We went back up there, and we survived, and I'm still here today.
Well, that's a good story. Ron Culpa with us, as you can tell, Major League umpire. So how much play do you give somebody? You know, we don't know. Are you chirping from the dugout and all that kind of stuff? How much play does an umpire give someone?
Well, we try to get a warning in all the time. The management wants us to get a warning in, and I believe in getting a warning in. You know, give them a little bit of rope. But, you know, every situation is different. I mean, we could have a team that's 25 games out of first place, and they're not very happy. You know, and then we have another situation where a team's in a pennant race, and our job is to keep them in the game if they want to stay in the game. If they don't want to stay in the game, then we eject them. But we try to give them some rope, and these fans play a lot of good money to come see these guys play nowadays. And but if, you know, they cross that line, then we have to get them.
So are there still the magic words to get kicked out of a game?
Yeah, it's anything usually has to do with you. You blank, you blank, you blank. And we look for the phrase you, because when they say you, that means they're coming after you.
Very good. I like that. All right. You did the World Series in 2011. It was a great World Series, the Cardinals and the Rangers. What was that like, just comparison to a regular game?
Unbelievable. I've had many playoff games and many play jobs in the playoffs, but I tell you what, when you walk on that World Series field, the concentration level, the pressure level is unbelievable. I can't even explain it in words. It really is incredible. It's an exciting time. It was an exciting World Series. I got the opportunity to work the plate in Game 4 when Holland beat St. Louis 4-0. And, Game 6, everybody's still talking about it around baseball. If you're watching baseball that night, you'll never forget it, you know, when the Cardinals came back like they did. And then, but it was a very, very exciting World Series and two great teams, you know, two classy managers with Ron Washington and Tony La Russa. And it was a very exciting time for me and my family.
Yeah, so what happened, La Russa? Because remember with the bullpen, that whole thing, and he brings the guy in and all that confusion.
Yeah, he said that the phones weren't working, and then they couldn't hear him on the other end. And, I think he explained it pretty good that the wrong guy came in. And it was a mistake that you don't normally see in a World Series atmosphere. And, Tony owned up. He said, you know, it was his fault. And it was one of those strange things that happened in baseball.
Where were you for Game 7?
Game 7, I was on the third base. I was working third base Game 7, and you know, just an outstanding ball game again, and you know, just the thrill of working at Game 7 was a lot of pressure in itself, and it's one I'll never forget.
Do you like instant replay? And again, we've had some calls, you know, in the playoffs. I can think of the Joe Mauer hit down the line, and even you know, some of the real good, and Tim McClelland, I mean, messed up a play with two guys on the base and called the wrong one out and all that kind of stuff. Is instant replay on its way, and what do you think about it?
I think it's coming here. I think it's going to go into effect next season. I don't think anything's going to get done this year. They still have a lot of their homework to do. Personally, in the society that we're in now with all the angles and the cameras and high def, and I think we're going to see a lot more before I retire. Me, personally, I'm not too against it. Because, you know, why not use it to our advantage for the help? But we also have to be careful, as Bud has stated, that, you know, this game has a lot of history, and baseball is played like that. And we don't want to take that element, the human element, out of the ballgame. You know, we go to instant replay, you'll never have arguments again with umpires. They'll just come out and say, we're going to replay. You'll never have a manager get kicked out. You know, just I don't think we want the game run like that.
Yeah. Well, how does it work when you go to replay? Do you all have to decide, okay, let's do a replay, or can it be requested?
It's usually fair fouls and fan interference and bounding balls down the line, and you know, that's only what we have right now, and usually that's usually just home run is what we're using for mostly right now, and three out of the four guys will leave the field, go look at the camera or the replay. It's a screen, a TV screen, and there's a guy up in New York who's showing us the feeds that he has in a room called BAM up there in New York, and then the ultimate. The three guys that go out off the field to look at it, then they make a decision.
Interesting. All right, now why only three go? What does the other guy do?
We try to keep the plate job on the field, the plate guy on the field, just, you know, just in case something odd would happen. You know, if the team start fighting, you know, someone's got to be there to report it. But we try to keep it at least one guy on the field.
I did not know that. See, I learned something every day. All right, what's your toughest call? I mean, maybe it's a check swing, I don't know. But what's the toughest call for the umpire? What's your toughest moment?
Probably the check swings, and also, you know, nowadays, probably catches, no catches. Out in the outfield when they're diving, you know, these guys are so athletic, and they're so quick. And that's probably one of our other toughest calls. And another one probably is swipe tags. You know, if you get a swipe tag at first base and you're the first base umpire, you know, sometimes you get blocked out and you don't see that great angle. And that's probably one of our other ones too.
In the neighborhood, those calls, and as I grew up, you know, it's been part of baseball as long as I've been watching a baseball game. I guess it's still part of it to some degree.
It is. We try to keep them, you know, that usually it's at second base. They call it the neighborhood play, but you know, we as umpires, we really do. We try to make them stay on the bag, touch the bag, stay on the bag. And I don't think you see as many guys off the bag as you used to back when, even when I was growing up watching baseball, the Ozzie Smiths, you know, the list goes on and on. But I think the guys more days are on the bag, because that's why they've been taught, the umpires are going to call it, stay on the bag.
Yeah, the good ones got out of the way quickly. Louis Aparicio, Larry Boa, Pee Wee Reese, people at the Concepcion, because they didn't want to get hit because runners went in and they went in hard, and you didn't have that interference call as well. So the game has changed in that regard. Well, interesting talking with you about this part of the game. Jim Joyce, and he had the Galarraga call at first base, and it was a perfect game, and obviously he missed the call. Should baseball have changed that? It was one of those historic moments. Should Bud Selig have just said, look, it was a perfect game, let's do it?
I say no, and I say no because here's my opinion, that say it's the last game of the season, and the Giants are playing to get into the playoffs, and there's a play at the plate, and heaven forbid we would miss it. Should Bud now change that one to get that team into the playoffs? See, where do you draw the line? And I think that's where we're at with that. So I think Mr. Selig did a great job in not changing it. And it was tough on Jimmy. It was tough on all of us. I was watching, actually, I was in San Francisco getting ready to walk on the field and watching the game on TV. And I was sick to my stomach for him. And, you know, it hurts for all of us when that happened to him.
Yeah, well, when you miss a call, and God, with all the replays, ESPN and MLB Network and all that, it's pretty obvious if you do miss one. Do you take it to heart?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it hurts. As soon as you miss it, you know it right in your gut. But as umpires, we're trained, you got to let it go and move on, because you're only as good as your next call, as your last call, I should say. And, you know, you have to forget it. And you look at replay in the locker room. If I miss a play, I go in the locker room and I look, why did I miss it? Was I out of position? Was I moving? Did I get blocked out? Why did I get blocked out? And you learn from it, and you try to get better each and every day.
All right, boy, nice to talk with Ron Culpa. Growing up, I mean, were there umpires that you like to watch? And, of course, the history of umpiring, we go back to Bill Clem, to Al Barlick, and I go to the National League umpires, to Bruce Fremming, and Eddie Montague, and people like that. Do you go back in the history of umpiring at all?
Absolutely. I love watching Dutch Rennert. When I was a kid, you know, watching, going to Cardinal games, and I always knew when Dutch was on the was working to play because he was loud, vocal, the fans knew him. And I kind of, you know, when I work to play too, I'm loud and I got good mechanics. I like the people to see my personality when it comes to the game. And, you know, the Harry Wendell stats, that's another name I enjoyed. And Eddie Montague, you mentioned he's a big guy. Eddie was a big mentor coming up when I was a young umpire.
All right, so you like your job, huh?
I got the best job in the world. I wouldn't trade it. I mean, it's a long haul once we start the season. I mean, I don't get home, you know, for good until October. You know, I get a few days off here and there, and it's a long haul, but I love my job. I wouldn't trade it in for anything.
Where do you call home?
I live in St. Louis. I make my home there. That's where my wife and my son are, and I love living in the Midwest. Love the change of seasons and love my hockey. I'm a big hockey fan, and so when the season's over, I relax, go to hockey games, and enjoy my life.
Right. Nice to have you on the show. We learn a lot. Honestly, you learn a lot. It's a pleasure to get to know you, and we'll look for you at AT&T Park, and we'll be booing you. Don't worry.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Okay. That's Ron Culpa right here at KNBR 680, the sports leader.